Deuteronomy chapter 18. The priests who are Levites, indeed the whole tribe of Levi, are to have no allotment or inheritance with Israel. They shall live on the offerings made to the Lord by fire, for that is their inheritance. They shall have no inheritance among their brothers. The Lord is their inheritance, as he promised them. This is the share due the priests from the people who sacrifice a bull or a sheep, the shoulder, the jowls, and the inner parts. You are to give them the first fruits of your grain, new wine and oil, and the first wool from the shearing of your sheep. For the Lord your God has chosen them and their descendants out of all your tribes to stand and minister in the Lord's name always. If a Levite moves from one of your towns anywhere in Israel where he is living and comes in all earnestness to the place the Lord will choose, he may minister in the name of the Lord, his God, like all his fellow Levites who serve there in the presence of the Lord. He is to share equally in their benefits, even though he has received money from the sale of family possessions. When you enter the land the Lord your God has given you, do not learn to imitate the detestable ways of the nations there. Let no one be found among you who sacrifices his son or daughter in the fire, who practices divination or sorcery, interprets omens, engages in witchcraft, or casts spells, or who is a medium or a spiritist, or who consults the dead. Anyone who does these things is detestable to the Lord, and because of these detestable practices, the Lord your God will drive out these nations before you. You must be blameless before the Lord your God. The nations you will dispossess listen to those who practice sorcery or divination. But as for you, the Lord your God has not permitted you to do so. The Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from among your own brothers. You must listen to him. For this is what you asked of the Lord your God at Horeb on the day of the assembly when you said, "Let us not hear the voice of the Lord our God, nor see this great fire any more, or we will die." The Lord said to me, "What they say is good. I will raise up for them a prophet like you from among their brothers. I will put my words in his mouth, and he will tell them everything I command him. If anyone does not listen to my words that the prophet speaks in my name, I myself will call him to account. But a prophet who presumes to speak in my name or anything I have not commanded him to say, or a prophet who speaks in the name of other gods must be put to death. You may say to yourselves, how can we know when a message has not been spoken of the Lord? If what a prophet proclaims in the name of the Lord does not take place or come true, that is a message the Lord has not spoken. That prophet has spoken presumptuously. Do not be afraid of him."
So, what have you learned?
It's good to be priest.
It's good to be what?
Priest. You got the best food.
Maybe if they obey.
Hey, you're also very dependent, though, on their honoring God the way they're supposed to and bringing it to them.
Yes.
The thing that comes to me from a natural perspective is you think, oh, what a bummer, they don't have any inheritance among their brethren, you know, and you look at what you're looking at. If you're looking at it from what's here on earth and temporal, that may seem like a harsh thing, but their inheritance is of the Lord, and the Lord is eternal. Their inheritance is so much greater than anything their brethren can have here on earth. And when you look at that perspective, it's so much greater where they're at, although they may not have homes and livestock and all that stuff that's really important down here on earth, they have the Lord.
Okay. Technically, they did have livestock. The cities they had, they were allowed to have so much territory outside that city to raise their crop and to have cattle or sheep or whatever that you happen to have. So they could have that. That's why he said, and he could, if this one Levi decides he wants to go to serve the Lord where he's at the temple or wherever it's going to be, he can sell all that. And that's his profit. He gets to keep it. He doesn't have to share it to anybody. He gets it all. Okay. Jeff.
What I thought was interesting was this discussion that starts in verse 14. It starts off with this idea about that the nations that they will be dispossessing practice sorcery and divination. But the mouthpiece that the Lord brings is this prophet, this predicted prophet that's going to be raised up from among the brothers. But I think it's interesting, starting in verse 16, that he's talking about that this is what they asked at Horeb. You know, let us not hear the voice of the Lord or see this great fire anymore, or we'll die. And then the Lord said, what they say is good.
Correct.
And that he's going to raise up for them a prophet. But it's really kind of interesting that the initial sense that I got there was that what they were saying was not good. Yet the Lord is saying that what they say is good. That it's almost like a way to bring about a one that speaks for God among them in a real physical, personal sense instead of something that is far off and not approachable.
Or so powerful.
Yeah, or so powerful.
Right, yeah. And you got the bottom line. That's what's happening to here.
It's like the power is then going to be presented in a human form.
Yeah, but the power in the Messiah was not mm-hmm. power. He didn't have power like the Eternal does.
But it's a prophetic thing in a way too, isn't it? Because just as they didn't want to hear or see the voice of God in the fire, they actually ended up, most of them anyway, rejecting the alternative version as well.
Yeah, because it didn't come with fire.
No.
So it's kind of funny. They rejected the fire, but when God came without fire, then they rejected it because it didn't have fire.
It's like what Yeshua says. I played the pipe for you, but you would not dance.
Right.
And I played a dirge, but you wouldn't mourn. It's like either way, they're not going to do what he's wanting to do. Yeah.
Okay. First things first. And we read in the 14th chapter where, you know, you shall surely tithe and increase of your grain in the field and produce year by year. You shall eat before the Lord your God in the place where he has chosen to make his name abide. The tithe of your grain, the tithe of the new wine, the tithe of the oil, and the firstborn of your herd and the firstborn of your flock, you shall learn to fear the Lord your God. Now, it sounds like you get to eat your firstborn. Well, see now, and here it says no. Is there a contradiction?
No.
What is, you're talking to the people, this is what you bring all, you bring in your first tithe, but who gets to eat the firstborn? The Levites. That's theirs. That's where you forget that belongs to them and not to you as an individual. So it looks like it's a contradiction between the two terms. Now one is a general term in which he's talking to everybody, all of Israel, and now he gets to specific in the 18th verse, 18th chapter says, by the way, that new wine, that new oil, and that new flock, that new sheep, that belongs to the Levites. Belongs to the Levites. That's just a little minor thing. Some people might want to say this contradiction. So I brought that up just to have an interesting statement. I had another interesting statement I looked at and I couldn't find an answer. It's verse 1. The priests, the Levites, and all the tribe of Israel, or all the tribe of the Levi, shall have no part or inheritance with Israel. They shall eat the offerings of the Lord made by fire. So I had to ask myself, this is the only place, by the way, where that is worded. And I've done the research, and I've read the commentaries, and they're not quite sure what that means, because every time you cook something, it's going to be cooked in fire, right?
Right.
So they're thinking that, this is just their assumption, they don't know, and I don't have a good answer for it yet. But when we think about the whole offering, well, the whole thing is supposed to go up in smoke, they're thinking that's not necessarily true, that the whole offering itself belongs to the Levites, and they get to eat it because it's a sacrifice by fire. But that's one of the interesting terminologies, which I have not been able to clarify. I thought I'd bring that out because maybe some of you people can research and find me a better answer on that one, okay? It's a very fascinating phrase. It's the only place it's found is that parable of Deuteronomy. Yes?
Is this the Isha offering? Because I had never heard. Is that the term for they shall eat the Isha offering of the Lord made by fire?
So, right.
And it does mean a burned offering, but I had never come across that term before.
I had neither. And that's why my first, I've researched, I had got a good picture.
Yeah, because so, other names like Zebach sacrifice
it's a different one. It's kind of fascinating. I don't know exactly what it is, so I threw it off. Let's see.
But you couldn't find anything.
I couldn't find it. I was doing some, I had the other research more important today too, but that's one of the interesting ones. I tried to look for about maybe an hour last night. And I said, I got to spend more time in other places. But it's kind of an interesting word. And I don't know why. If I knew why, I'd give you a spiritual answer to the thing. But I can't give an answer.
It's Isha. It's also Ish is man.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It is
a very fascinating phrase. And, like you said, they get the best part of the meat. They get the best part of the meat. They get the cheeks. They get both hindquarters. They get the rump roast and all that. They get everything. But we're talking about those that which is of that you offer as a offering unto God. It's not that every sheep you have and every bull you have. It's the one that you offer before the Lord as an offering, especially on the holy days and the high days or on a special occasion. Okay, we're not talking about every animal that you have. Just those that are to be there for the before and brought before and given unto the eternal. Okay, let me clarify that statement. It's not, I mean, you know, if you had 400 cattle, you can't have any rump roast.
Yeah.
And say, what's no, it's just the ones that you offer. You're the firstborn belongs to him, plus the tithe, the tenth one in the series. But a special one that you come up and you want to give a Thanksgiving offering or a Shalom offering, you get to partake of it also, but you don't get to partake of the parts that is listed here. That belongs to the Levites. Okay? Just kind of a little clarification. All right. And of course, talked about, don't have to go too much on the Levites, but I want to go to verse 10, because here we must look at. What did we talk about last week? What chapter were we in? 17th chapter. What was in the 16th chapter? The appointed times. The feast. All the feasts being listed. All right. Then we discovered or talked about a connection between that and a certain thing called the sun and the moon, the stars. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, this 10th chapter, 10th verse here in the 16th, 18th chapter, sometimes we read it. And I want to go through it today. The 11th verse. And there's a reason why we need to spend some time on this one, because it helps us to see why we are going to be having to have, or he's going to set up a prophet that you will listen to. Right now, there seems to be no connection, right? So first thing we're going to talk about is passing through fire. What does that mean? What were they doing? I'm sorry, what?
Does it mean to walk on coal? Walk on hot coals.
Okay.
That's in the worship of Molech. And there was, as I recall, it was involved babies going through the fire.
What was it, human sacrifice?
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's what they do with Moab.
Okay. Have you ever heard of the Valley of Gehenna?
Yes.
Okay, where is the Valley of Gehenna?
Jerusalem.
It's in Jerusalem. All right. Now remember, they're not crossed over yet, have they? And one of the first things he addresses is, do not do that. All right? However, in Ezekiel, the 16th chapter, there's a lot of places in the Bible. Ezekiel 16th chapter, we read, briefly, how God compares Israel to a woman and her beauty and how beautiful she is. However, she played the harlot or whoredom. Now, we have to know and understand what that spiritual terminology of a whore is. Do not put it on a physical plane. Because this is going to help us to understand a little bit more about what it means to be a whore. All right? And play a harlot. Harlot and a whore is the same thing. One, you get paid for it. Another one, you do not. All right? And we read these things from chapter 18. We're going to get, hope, have a picture in our minds of exactly what's going on. Because this is a very big issue with God. All these he's named are very important to him. Otherwise, it would not have been mentioned. It would have been just a casual statement. Like, do not do as the heathens do and goodbye. No. What did they do? How did they live? How did they conduct themselves? How did they rule their lives? Well, in Ezekiel verse 20, moreover, he's talking to Israel now, moreover, you did take your sons and your daughters, whom you have born unto me, and you have sacrificed them to be devoured. Is this of thy whoredoms a small matter? Okay, now wait a minute. We're taking your sons, we're taking your daughters, and we're sacrificing them in fire. All right? And God says, is that what you do in your whoredom? Now, we don't think of sacrificing a child, putting them in fire, has anything to do with any sexual relationship, right? So it has to have a spiritual terminology. So now we've got to find out exactly what it was. And you're very close, Jeff, about Moloch. But there's another one, which is addressed. Verse 21, you have, of Ezekiel, you have slain my children and delivered them to cause them to pass through the fire for them. Who are the them? The what?
Idols.
It's more than idols. We'll get to that point. Because this part of Deuteronomy 10 and 11th verse is talking about something far greater than an idol. All right? Passing someone or putting a child into the fire has something more to do with than an idol. All right.
Aren't they dealing with the demonic? I mean, in a big way.
In a very, very big way. We're getting more specific now. We're going into this thing.
Well, Satan himself.
It is having to do in dealing with the spirit beings. Every time you have a whoredom taking place, is you are making contact with a spirit being. Every single time. And that's what he calls whoredom. That's what a whore is. Whether you're male or female makes no difference in Hebrew. The words are interchangeable. Depends on how it's used. And so you're stuck with this thing. You say, okay, now. So now we're going into this picture here. We're seeing a horrible thing, which we can't ourselves picture, but we have to go back. I'm going to read the Jewish Publication Society, verse 21. You have slain my children and delivered them up, is setting them apart unto them. In 2 Kings, chapter 17, 2 Kings 17:17. They caused their sons and their daughters to pass through the fire and used deviation and enhancements and sold themselves to do evil in the sight of the Lord to provoke him to anger. Jeremiah 19th chapter, verse 5. They have built also high places to Baal to burn their sons with fire for a whole offering unto Baal, which I commanded not, nor spoke of, neither came into my mind. So it never was in God's mind to ever have anybody be sacrificed to fire. See, we're messing around with something else. Now, Baal is not just an idol, is it? It's not a thing, not a stone, not trees. It's a spirit being. All right? A spirit being's plurality. Because every Baal means, what does Baal mean?
Lord.
A lord of something. He's overseer, he's in charge of, and he is in control of this group of people. Now, as they go into this promised land, what did God say about these people? They do this. That's why I want you to eliminate them off the face of the earth. He wasn't eliminating them because they are some kind of race or because they're some kind of weird people, because they are, you know, they were doing things that were horrible.
Evil.
Evil. Wicked.
Yeah. Abominable.
Abominable, as he calls it. But they were dealing with, not with the Elohim of heaven and earth, but with Elohim. It says other, he reads here, other gods, other Elohim. Bring in another Elohim, you bring in another Baal. Guess what? You're going to serve it. He's not talking about the physical things around about our world. You know, in Jeremiah 10, it talks about the Christmas tree, or the tree just set up. It cannot hurt you. It doesn't bother you. It cannot talk. It cannot walk. It cannot do anything. It's absolutely worthless. No threat to it whatsoever. Now this, in chapter 18, in verse 10-11, is talk about an awful lot of intermingling with the spirit world. And the Christian world sometimes gets a little confused. I'll get you onto how they get confused in a little while. Now, the second thing was what? Some of your translations have the word witchcraft. The others have the word deviation. The word is more deviation rather than witchcraft. Witchcraft is a different thing. We'll get to witchcraft later. But right now, we'll just talk about this. This is the second thing he talked about. And that is, what is deviation?
Well, divination.
Divination.
Yeah, well, divination is basically your, well, I mean, it comes from the word divine. So you're looking for basically you're trying to tap into divine
knowledge.
Wisdom, divine knowledge. And
how come John, the book of Revelation, was called John the Divine? Why was he called John the Divine? We don't see that anymore. But what was he ever called John the Divine?
Because he was giving an apocalyptic vision of the future. And the word is nakash, and it means to tell the future or to be able to, basically fortune telling. Well, see, in this sense here.
Right, but what it comes from is the divine. Not talk about God the divine, but a spirit world.
Yeah.
A spirit person is now talking to them. And so the book of Revelations, guess what? It says, the spirit came and talked to me. And so in Old English, 1611, they use that word divine because who did John talk to? He talked to a spirit. Therefore, he was called divine. He addressed himself as a divine person, talking to a divine person. Now here, Deuteronomy, you don't want to do that. So you're committing whoredom. Whether you're getting paid for it or not. Fortune telling is a good example. You walk into and have a lady read your poem. How much you pay her? Well, whatever you pay her. She is what? She, what is she doing? She's not a witch. What is she? What is she practicing?
Divination.
She makes contact with a spirit being. Now, those things are very serious with God. Now, this also involves, by the way, did some research this thing, I was quite surprised. It's all a form of divination based upon the theory that the elements or the movements of the celestial bodies, the stars, the planets, the sun, and the moon. Guess what? What do you say? Do not have any, do not worship the sun and the moon and the stars. Why?
They were created.
They're going to, what is created rather than the creator.
And you begin to look and listen to the
astral signs rather than God himself.
Yes, correct. And it's a spirit concept now. That's why they have in the Christian world, where the confusion comes in, is a lot of Christians believe and accept signs of the zodiac, you know, what star are you born under, what, and Christians don't think there's anything wrong with it. But you can't mingle that.
Right.
Okay? You don't mingle the zodiac signs of the running your life by the stars in association with, because what you really are running your life with? By angelic world, the demonic angelic world. You start obeying and listening to, and thousands and millions of people pick up their newspaper to find out what their horoscope, the horrible scope, has to tell them. All right? And they live by it. Now, this is what happened in the land of Israel before the Israelites were there. Those people were doing that. All right? They were making contact with divine beings. All right? The moon. Go ahead.
It's really quite an interesting thing, because here again you see the point, counterpoint, the genuine, the counterfeit with, the God's, the way he orders things, counts off time, sets aside appointed times and such is based on the sun, moon, and stars. Thus you have the counterfeit over here, people worshiping and being mystified by the motion of the sun, moon, and stars. Because it's understandable. I mean, down through time, the whole idea of gravity, it seems like voodoo, because it's just so bizarre to even think about.
Yes.
That the sun has control over the planets and their motion, but you don't see anything. There's no string connected, no rope, right, or anything else.
Now remember, the planets were at one time called, and they are called, you look at the book of Jude, they're called wandering stars. That's what they are. A planet is called a wandering star. All right? Now the moon, Jill, you have something to say?
Going back a little bit before we get too far, the word whoredom, you say, is different in that it's contact with the spirit being, not God.
That's correct.
And so the difference between like the worship of idols, where idols have eyes but they cannot see and ears but they
cannot hear.
So which one? Yes. I'm thinking the whoredom has to be of sacrificial type of worship that's going on with demonic.
That's
spirit.
Correct. That's correct.
So, but
every
the
time the word
of idol is, not that it's better or anything like that, but they have eyes, but they cannot see.
See.
But which, the one that the Lord hates the most would be the whoredoms?
Yep.
Or, okay, all right.
The idols you can destroy.
Right. But then when you sacrifice, then it said, you asked the question about to them or something. It was something about
to them.
The them.
The them was the Baals, the worshippers. They're sacrificing their child to the Elohims of the demonic world.
Yes. So then.
That's the them is referring to the Baals and the Moloch, or any of the others that they sent their fire. And the Valley of Gehenna is where the valley was, and they would sacrifice their children into that valley, and it was under Gehenna.
That would bring possession. You know, sort of like Faust type of thing.
Yeah. What object member of the demonic world isn't to save people's lives? It's to kill them. Oh, they don't have any life left.
So there's no possession involved. They'd just die.
Yep. Let's talk about the moon. The moon worship is founded on the belief that the phases of the moon and the growth and the decline of plant, animal, and human life are related. In some societies, food was laid out at night to absorb the rays of the moon, which were thought to have power to cure illness and prolong life. You ever heard of moonstruck? The word lunatic is one who's been struck by the moon.
Yeah.
And remember, what does Psalm say? Listen carefully. You will not be struck by the moon or the sun.
Oh,
now we have to get into connection here. There's a spiritual realm in that vault.
Yeah.
How can you be struck by the moon? It doesn't do anything to you. Now, you might be struck by the sun if you're out there in the heat. But yeah.
Any person working in the emergency services, whether it's the police or in hospitals, in emergency rooms, will tell you at certain times of the month when the moon is full, that's it's phenomena. It's like the weird ones come out in people. There's more injuries, there's more accidents, there's more crimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. It's a reality. Yeah.
Right.
This goes back to, I think, what Jeff was saying earlier, is that God designed the sun, moon, and stars to do certain things, like you're talking about gravitational pull. This affects the tides of the ocean and this kind of thing. Even women's bodies are affected by the lunar cycle.
Yes.
But when you actively try to seek that out in divination, or you actively try to seek that out, you're tampering with things that God doesn't want us to tamper with.
Yeah.
In Central Africa, it's customary for a mother to bathe her newborn child by the light of the first full moon. The moon was frequently equal with wisdom and justice as a worship of the Egyptian god. So what we're seeing here in this little bit of chapter 18, verse 10, 11, are the things that God is very angry with. And he said, and one I read already, I was so angry, I had to kill you. Yes.
You know what, Richard?
Because you're not worshiping God in this case. You're worshiping not an idol. You're worshiping a nether god.
Yeah. I was just going to say, it's interesting that Islam has the full, it has the moon,
crescent.
The crescent moon as its symbol. And they have that, I think it's during, there's a ceremony during the year, and I've just was looking at pictures of it, where they take and get a knife and cut their children, babies.
They
cut your skull and to have blood running down over you. This is the same thing, isn't it?
Just the same thing, yeah.
Cutting.
Yeah.
Okay, so what we're getting an overall picture here, I hope. A picture. We're not finished this particular area here yet because I've got to finish it. Sheesh. So I'll try to get through 18th chapter today.
It's really good.
All right. Okay, I won't go through too much more in no detail, but you know there's a soothsayer or interpreter of omens, and then there's things called a sorcerer. Now, do not get that confused with the Greek word. It is not someone who deals with medicines or medical things. He's not a pharmacist. This is talking Hebrew word here. All right. What is a witch in this particular area of the book of Deuteronomy when it uses the word witch or witchcraft? It's a different word. You know what the word witch means?
Rebellion.
No. The rebellion or witchcraft is one thing.
Oh.
Okay. The word witch basically means the one who has the ability to know. Witch knows something. both, and a wizard also knows something. What do they know? They're making contact with yet a different Elohim. Each one of these, by the way, are different Elohims. They're not the same one. The one that goes to the fire, that's a different Elohim than the one that does with deviation. Okay, we'll say we're right.
Divination.
Yeah. And the one that's a soothsayer, that's a different one. The one that's an interpreter of omens, that's a different one. We have all these different Elohim up there. Not, and it's called whoredom. So you play the harlot with anybody you want, as much as you want. And I just read that section where he said, but Israel, maybe we'll go back and read it just to have a second. Was it Jeremiah? Maybe I didn't read it. Maybe I haven't reached. Maybe I haven't reached it yet. Maybe that's it. Now, the witchcraft basically means one who knows, okay, or Purdue. Now, in Ezekiel, I'm sorry, Exodus chapter 7, verse 11, and Pharaoh also called the wise men and the sorcerers. We're not talking about, they called the witches or the wizards who know something. They are the one that can whisper. By the way, it also means, witch means, or wizard means, one who speaks or sees things, but speaks quietly. Doesn't go openly and tell anybody what they hear and see and understand. This is the reason. Yes.
The Witch of Endor.
Witch of Endor. You know, and so you start thinking about all these things and you start saying, we have sometimes been polluted, excuse me, with some of the Walt Disney things and cartoon things and, you know, the Wicked Witch of the East and on. And what's that other one? The Wizard of Oz. Yes, that's just another wizard. Got inside information. And we made a big, huge movie out of it. And so it was an innocent little movie. No, wait a minute. You're playing around with the wrong Elohim. It's not a good thing, your children, to pay attention to things.
Which is why this new movie that's coming out is so bad.
Yeah.
About demons.
So if we keep going now in Dan, the second chapter, verse 2, the king, meaning Nebuchadnezzar, commanded all the magicians and the astrologers and the sorcerers. Now, see, we have one of them, the magicians, serve a different Elohim, the astrologers serve a different Elohim, and the sorcerers serve a different Elohim, and the Chaldeans, which is a different kind altogether, also serves an Elohim about dreams. So all we're doing is we're seeing what God has said, right? You're making contact with, and he says, it's evil. Do not do it.
What's the difference between them and principalities and powers?
Same thing. Principalities and powers of the air, same thing. Not all principalities of the air are evil.
No, but I'm talking about there's certain principalities over certain cities.
Correct. And this is what's happening in all of the land of Canaan. Before the Israelites there, there was each one of those principalities were over that area. And they're slowly and slowly defeated. There's also a belief system now. I'm not saying it's not true. But when God came through and he destroyed Egypt, he used destroyed nine plagues, or nine, to kill nine Elohims. Wiped their power out. And that's their assumption. I'm sorry, what?
Nine.
Just the nine.
Because that's very interesting, because in verse 10 and 11, there are nine Hebrew words. There are nine divination and so on. There are nine Hebrew terms for what you've just been talking about.
That's right.
And I wondered why nine.
Now you have an answer, right?
Nine, yeah.
The tenth one is, you're dead.
Yeah, yeah.
So say that again, Sue.
Well, if you look on from verse 10 to 11, the word is kesem, witchcraft, anan, soothsaying, that's being translated as an observer of times, nakash, divination or fortune telling, kasha, which is witchcraft and sorcery, kabar, a charmer, sha'al, a consulter, with familiar spirits,
right.
And Og, a necromancer, Yedione, a knower, or one who has a familiar spirit.
and a necromancer, which is a darash, which means to seek and inquire of heathen gods.
Of heathen god,
so
or
there's
dead.
Nine names.
Calling forth, the last one he mentioned is calling forth of the dead.
Yes.
That is amazing. Now, we're looking at these things. Now, watch. You beat me to it, because, see, I have nine.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. We're supposed to be here to learn from each other, right?
Because they're all very similar, but there's just a slight twist on each one.
Just a slight twist on every one of them. All right? Now, what I'm going to do, I'm going to read. Sheesh. I'm going to try to read the Hebrew translated into English. Okay, kind of like word for word on verse 10 and 11. All right. Let not him be found among you, one crossing son of him or daughter of him, and the fire dividing and deviation, practicing sorcery or interpreting omens, or engaged in witchcraft or casting spells, or in inquiring a medium or spirit, or consulting to the ones dead. Remember what king?
Saul.
Called forth for the dead. Now, did Saul come forth from the dead?
Did Saul
come?
Samuel.
No.
What came forth?
A demon.
It says there in Hebrew, it says, an Elohim rose up from the earth and addressed Saul. So when you call forth for the dead, thinking you want to add ancestor from grandma, or great grandma, or great great grandma, or grandpa, what's really coming up is not the dead person. What's really coming up is an Elohim. Yes.
I think deep down, some of our ancestors who were into this kind of thing knew this, but I'd always been a little bit perplexed about the Celtic tradition that surrounds Halloween, about how they would dress up and disguise themselves or hide themselves from their ancestors.
Never thought about
spirits.
That.
It's like, wait a minute. If grandma, grandpa, great-grandma, grandpa, when they were alive, loved you and adored you and this and that, why all of a sudden after they were dead you have to be scared of them and hide from them? Well, because I think deep down they knew that there was something else going
on.
It wasn't grandma and grandpa they were hiding from. Deep down they knew it. But yet they would always talk about the ancestral spirits and this kind of thing. But they knew, I think, deep down. Maybe that knowledge had gotten hidden or somewhere. But I think they knew deep down that what they were messing with was not grandma and grandpa or this and that. There's something more demonic and malevolent in what they were playing around with.
When I see someone with a you know, you see inside the globe, something's fishy there. Yes.
Well, the very word occult means hidden.
Correct.
But now
okay, I want to move on because I've run out of time and Daniel's got to give his message here yet. Take your time. Yes. Now, verse 15. Does this explain something to you? All that we just got through talking about, now he says, I am going to bring forth a prophet that doesn't use
any of those.
He's going to be like,
we are going to do what? Respond to what he said. Okay? Now, the Messiah didn't use any of these maneuvers. Because, number one, he knew who they came from. He went about to use them. All of a sudden, now we have someone, a prophet, that comes into our lives, to our being. Now, this whole thing is leading right up. Why wasn't the book of Deuteronomy? Why is this listed to this point? Because he says, now when you cross over into the promised land, I'm going to send to you a prophet, and you listen to him. Don't listen to these nine other Elohims. So kind of explain a little bit of what he said. It is good that they... What? Why is it good? Let me not hear again the voice of the Lord my God, nor let me see this great fire anymore, lest I die. And that's true. Because if they kept hearing his voice and seeing the fire, what was going to happen to them? They're going to die. Now, why were they going to die for? What happens when you see that much power, which is far greater than any of these this demonic world has. The heart beats fast, and you could actually die of just plain old heart attack. You'd be scared to death. You'd be terrified. And that's not what God was after. First, he had to terrify them just long enough to put the fear of God in them. Now he says, now it's good that they said that. What they have spoken is good. Verse 18, I will rise up for them a prophet like you from among their brethren, and I'll put my word in his mouth, and he shall speak to them all that I command him. And it shall be that whoever will not hear my words, which he speaks in my name, I will require it of him. Or hold him accountable. All right? Because, see, the Messiah doesn't use these abominations. And sometimes when we look at this thing, we don't know who they are. We think of idol worship. But this is not talk about idol worship here. We're making contact with the spirit world. Stay away from it. At all costs, stay away from it. I don't even like to watch. There's a television program. I can't remember the name of it, but it's one of the witches programs.
Whisper or something.
Bewitched.
Bewitched, yeah. But there was another one recently.
Bewitched.
The young lady.
Yeah.
Anyway. And there's that one that has three of them, plus a wizard.
Yeah.
I'm saying, my, don't you people know what's going on?
Oh.
Our country is getting involved into that kind of stuff. Now, I grant you that we have an awful lot of sins and transgressions in this country.
Yeah.
But sometimes I begin to wonder, we are playing a whoredom.
Yeah.
This country is headed in the direction of playing a harlot and a whoredom. Because that's where they go to. They gravitate to. They eliminate everything they can with God. And guess what you're going to do? You're going to go to the spirit world to get answers. That's what's going to happen. So I think to a great degree, just before we reach up to this thing of the prophet in our country, and I think the world too. We talked about the idol that cannot see.
Right.
There's one place in the book of Revelations where that idol will come alive. But it won't be the idol. It'll be the spirit in it. Whoever the power is, we don't know. But we're taking something that's still a spirit world, because you cannot call from the dead anybody. Only Jesus says, when I call them, they will come up.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they stay down there. He's the only one that can call them up from the dead.
Yeah.
And he won't be calling them up an Elohim.
Yeah. Right.
Right? He'll be calling up the person.
Elohim is not
me. Yes. All right. We don't need to go any farther, do we? I wouldn't mind finishing the chapter, but I think we got wrapped up.
No,
but verse 21, though, I think it'd be interesting. So how do we know? How do you know if Jesus is the Messiah?
The Lord reveals to him by his Spirit.
When a prophet speaks in the name of the Lord, if the thing does not happen or come to pass, that is the thing which the Lord has not spoken. That prophet has spoken it presumptuously. You will not be afraid of him. Now, what has Jesus spoken? Has he spoken anything that's come to pass yet?
Well, you know, I think one of the greatest things that he said has come to pass is that, you know, you search the scriptures thinking that in them you have life, but these things speak of me.
Correct.
So when you go through and you look at all the holy days and the Torah and everything else, you see them, you know, pictured in and pointing to the Messiah. There you go. That's one of the greatest fulfillments of anything he said that's
okay.
Possible.
What's the greatest fulfillment?
His resurrection.
His resurrection. All right. He said, I will come back 3 days and three nights. Did it come to pass? Yes, it did. Guess what you got? You got proof. You got proof. The very resurrection of the dead, that is Jesus himself, proves that he is the prophet Before that, it didn't prove he's a prophet. Because, hey, you said one thing, let's see if it really happens, right? Okay, what's Pontius Pilate said? Don't you know I can save your life? And what did Jesus say? No, you don't. I have the power to take my life and to bring it back. And it scared him, remember?
Mm-hmm.
Pilate was terrified of that statement. But see, Pilate, read why he's scared of that statement, wasn't because he's scared of Jesus. He was scared because of his belief of the spirit world, that one of those spirit beings will bring it about, and therefore he was terrified of that, but not of Jesus. You understand what I'm saying? It's a little different world. Okay. No more comments? I just want to get this point of the verse 10 and 11, to get that into your brain, to knowing why it leads up to the prophet. Okay? Because the world, our world that we live in today, is heading more and more that direction. So it comes out of faith. Do you believe what Jesus said? Yes or no? If you do, then what does it say? You will do what he tells you to do. If you don't, what happens to you? I, God said, will hold you accountable for not listening.